So, I say this every time, and no one ever listens. Like an Old Testament prophet. That I'm always seem to be handed Bible verses to preach about, which are not easy. And when Chris, again, thank you, said he wanted me to preach on Hosea, I didn't actually know much about it until someone said, "Oh, you're preaching on Hosea. That's the story where God tells someone to marry a prostitute." Okay. We got another one then. So, yes, we have a story where God tells someone to marry a prostitute. And it's a story where the people of Israel, again, have deviated from God's will. They have done things that God has told them not to, and God is calling on his people to return, to give up their idolatry, to give up their false practices, and to return to him. That's the core message. And the marriage to Gomer, the unfaithful woman, or the prostitute, depending on how you read it, that is a symbol of how Israel has deviated from God's will. The message being that that relationship, like Israel itself, will be restored once Israel has cast off its idolatry. And the questions in the study guide, which are very helpful, which are designed for us to reflect on our own experiences, are entirely logical. What does this passage say to us about God? It shows God's intense love for us, that even though we turn away from God, he never turns away from us. Absolutely. It also shows us of the dangers of idolatry, of worshipping false gods. Okay? Yeah. We can get hold of that. That makes perfect sense. I have some questions. The first question: what exactly do we mean by idolatry? Because idolatry takes many forms. Some forms of idolatry are obvious. You've got to ask yourself what the manufacturers of the golden calf really thought they were doing. Was it really lost on them that this wasn't exactly what God had in mind for them? In the same vein, when Vladimir Putin designed his Christian church, his army church, and had the entire floor of the church made from melted down German Tiger II tanks to make the point that Russia crushes its enemies, you've got to ask yourself, what was going through his mind? When you see the arrests carried out by ICE in America, including a very vivid image of, I'm not sure if he was a vicar or a priest, trying to intervene and being sort of repulsed by these big armored thugs. Again, you have to say, well, it's fairly obvious what's going on. Surely they must be aware of these things. My grandfather said that the thing he liked most about the Nazis, promising start to a sentence, was that they were so obviously evil that he never, even for a moment, flickered in his doubt that they should be resisted. And so he had no problem going to war with the Nazis at all. When he was a doctor, he wasn't pulling the trigger, but he still went to war. He was still part of that effort. So there are idols that are in plain sight. And we know what they are. We've already mentioned several. I don't really feel the need to labour that point. But I've expanded my mandate a little bit, because I have looked a little bit ahead. Sorry, I don't think this trips up the next sermon, though. Forgive me. To Hosea 7, where God is describing the sins of the various different Israeli peoples at this time. And it says, This is from 7, verse 9 to 10. Sorry, 8, 9 to 10. Talking about the Israeli people. Foreigners sap his strength, but he does not realize it. His hair is sprinkled with grey, but he does not notice. Israel's arrogance testifies against him, but despite all of this, he does not return to the Lord his God or search for him. Now, I'm not sure exactly in what way their strength was being sapped. I suspect that is in many ways lost to history. But the bit I focused on in that were the words, he does not realize it. And then afterwards, but he does not notice. There are idols that are in plain sight. And in a sense, they are a problem, not merely because of what they are, but because we think that they are the sole problem, and we can be very pleased with ourselves because, of course, we don't worship those idols, so we're okay. But what about the hidden idols? What about the ones we don't see? What about the ones that aren't quite so obvious? Because as I read through and as I read these passages, I kept thinking I've seen this before. As many of you will know, I am a historian, and my specialism is the Crusades. And here's the interesting thing about the Crusades. They lasted for hundreds of years. I'm mostly interested in the period from the 11th century to the 14th. And in that period, I can count on the fingers of one hand the number of people who said that they're wrong. There's a Cistercian monk called Isaac who said, rather ironically, I don't think this is quite what the disciples had in mind. Yeah, go figure. There's a Catalan hermit who tried to persuade, in a fictional story, tried to persuade the Pope to convert the Knights Templar to trying to win converts through preaching rather than fighting. And he didn't get very far. Well, it's a mixed picture, but he didn't get very far. Other than that, crusading's fine. Hundreds of years. And this is a period of intensive theological reflection and discussion, all sorts of incredible holy figures, some of whom are still quoted positively today, but they're still living in a crusading culture where it's right at the center of what they do, and they don't notice. And that seems odd to us. We hear about the people of Israel worshipping golden calves, and we that's ridiculous. Of course they should have followed God. We hear about the Crusaders conducting holy war and slaughtering in the name of Jesus, and we think, well, obviously that's wrong. But was it obvious to them? If you live in a society that's been under attack on various frontiers for hundreds of years, it may not be so obvious. If you live in a society where its pre-Christian roots lie in deeply militarized tribes, it may not be obvious. If you live in a world where society is structured according to its leaders, all of whom are fighters, or the vast majority are, it may not be so obvious. Because the idolatry runs with the thread of society. These are the things that fly under the radar because we don't notice them, because they are what we do. They are part of our society. And I've wondered about this too when it comes to our own society. Something that I thought about when I was a teenager, I think, was the verses that get used for sermons. And I thought, it's wonderful of a preacher, a pastor, a vicar, the person giving the sermon could preach on any verse in the Bible and we can hear something about God. But over time, I got a bit more leery of this, because I realise that there's about 100 verses that just do the rounds. And in fact, this brings me back to recontextualising Chris in a positive way. Yeah? Because by picking on Hosea, we're picking something that is profoundly unusual. We don't normally talk about it. But I began to see that we tend to pick the sermon topics on topics that we're comfortable with, such topics that feel right, such topics that work with the grain of our general thinking of the society of which we are part. They're socially acceptable. They sound right. And now we're looking at Hosea, where God asks someone to marry a prostitute. And that got me to thinking, well, in 100 years' time, when society has moved on and is worshipping different idols, what will it be about our society that is so obviously a form of idolatry? Surely the people, I don't know, in the UK, in Ruddington, in this room, should have realised, it should have been obvious to them, that this is idolatry, but we don't see it. I'm going to go back to the Crusades and give you an example. One of the biggest theologians of this era is someone called Bernard of Clairvaux, head of the Cistercian order of monks. And he gave a sermon about the Knights Templar. And in the sermon, he said, when Jesus was asked by different people, was it Jesus or John the Baptist? I've confused myself now. Either way, when Jesus was asked, we'll say it was Jesus, by people of different professions, what can we do to be saved? A group of soldiers came up to him and said, what can we do to be saved? And Jesus said to them, don't steal money from people. Be content with your pay. Aha! What he did not say was that you shouldn't fight and kill. Therefore, it's okay to fight and kill. Now, that seems ridiculous to us. But within his context, he's running with the flow of the culture. It makes perfect sense to him. And it just gets me to thinking, what is it that we don't spot because it's just in our everyday language? And so much, I'm not coming to this with any conclusions, but with a question. What are our hidden idols? It's all very well for us to be smug about saying, well, obviously the behaviour of ICE agents is wrong. Obviously, the behaviour of Putin is wrong. We know these things, they're obvious. But what are the things we miss? Now, the second part to my sermon is linked to this, because I think that one of the things that Hosea does incredibly well is it gives us a portrait we don't expect of God. We don't expect God to say, go and marry a prostitute. That sounds very much not what we would expect. We don't expect God to say that a child should be named with the name meaning, you are not loved. That sounds profoundly odd to us. Now, we can theologize that, we can explain that, well, that's about Israel as a whole being alienated from God and needing to come back into communion by God. Yes, yes, and yes. But I think that there is another point here, which is that God is not, well, let me put it in the words of Alison Morgan, who is a theologian who I deeply respect. She's a trained medievalist, so she must be. And she captions the Bible as the wild gospel. We like a God, we like a Bible which stays where they're set. God is supposed to be lovely. God is supposed to be nice. God is supposed to be the kind of person we could sit on a beanbag with and tell our troubles to. And of course, in a sense, I'm lampooning a little bit, but these things are true. It's what we tell our children, and rightly so. Of course they should turn to God. But there is another dimension to God too. God is the creator of the entire universe and everything in it. All human natural, all laws, scientific, those of physics, etc., were devised by him. We are ants looking at skyscrapers, and we cannot predict his behavior. We can't control him or put parameters on him based on our own expectations. He is wild. And I've experienced this myself on many occasions in the Bible, where I can read the same passage 10 times and get 10 different meanings from it. Every time. It's not like the Bible moves, but somehow it affects me differently. There is a wildness to it. And so my closing thought with this, and I always inject C.S. Lewis into my sermon somehow, so I'm going to close with this thought, is that I think the thing that Hosea does really well is it says two things about God. the intense, intense, desperate love he has for his people, but also the fact that God is so much bigger than we can comprehend. He's a force that we can't contain, put brackets around. We are subordinate to him. We can't tell him what to do. He is the one who determines our existence. Because in the words of C.S. Lewis in the Narnia series, after all, he is not a tame lion. Thank you.